Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, I like to give you an opportunity when we usually come back here after the 11 o'clock Central Time break to talk just a little bit about Keep Believing Ministries and what people can find at your website. I would normally ask if you're going to be speaking anywhere, but I'm sure a lot of that has been put on hold. But tell our listeners a little bit about Keep Believing Ministries.
Well, yesterday I mentioned, Ed, the series I'm doing on the Book of Daniel, and last night on Facebook Live, we did Daniel chapter 5, God's Graffiti. I'm doing it Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, every week, about a chapter of time till we finish the book. And so tonight at 7 p.m. Central Time, I'm going to do How to Tame Lions from the story of Daniel in the Lion's Den. This is one of those stories, Ed, that, you know, our kids know, children. This right. Sunday school kids know, but boy, what amazing lessons for living, for those of us who want to live for God amidst a dominant pagan and unbelieving culture, which is one of the great lessons of the Book of Daniel generally. So tonight, 7 p.m., go to Facebook, type in Keep Believing Ministries. There's only one of us. You'll find our page on Facebook, and I'll be teaching that chapter tonight, How to Tame Lions, 7 p.m. tonight on the Keep Believing Facebook page. And tomorrow morning, then it'll be posted on the Keep Believing website, which is keepbelieving.com.
All right. Thank you. You have just laid out my evening tonight.
Okay. All right.
5 o'clock Central Time. I'll be tuning into Abe Hamilton, the Hamilton Corner.
There you
between
go.
Between 6 and 7, I'll be fixing some dinner, and then 7 o'clock, I'm going to be learning about
Boom,
Daniel.
There you go.
That's right. That's a full evening for anybody.
Yeah.
That voice you heard is Steve Jordahl. No,
hi,
that's
by the
that's
way. Right. Sorry.
People know who what your voice is and who you are. For those who don't, that's Steve Jordahl, reporter for OneNewsNow.com. He usually comes in typically on our third segment. This show is roughly an hour and a half, starts 5 minutes after 10 and goes to 11:30. And Steve, we give charge of that third segment in which we find ourselves.
Quite the grammatarian you are.
Well,
I don't think that's a word, but I mean, you didn't end the sentence with a preposition. Good for you.
No, I try not to. Listen, around here, we got Randall Murphy, the editor of the AFA Journal. He's come up after devotion sometimes and let me know in a nice way. He's not a grammar Nazi, but we do have a couple of grammar Nazis running around. So I won't mention them by name, but all right, Steve, what we got story-wise here?
Well, I wanted to just update you guys. I heard Abe talking at the end of last hour that Rod Rosenstein was at the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Abe hadn't seen what had been said there because he was in here, but I have, and Abe was absolutely right, which doesn't surprise anybody. Rod Rosenstein in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and under questioning from Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, we heard some interesting things. Lindsey Graham asked Rod Rosenstein, the whole concept that the campaign was colluding with Russians, there was no there in August of 2017. Do you agree or not? To which Rosenstein said, I agree with the general statement. So they knew. What else? The FBI field office, he was unaware that the FBI field office had recommended that General Flynn be dropped from its Crossfire Hurricane investigation. That's the investigation into the Trump campaign, the official name of the Russia-Trump collusion hoax, and that it would have mattered to him how he conducted the department had he known. And then finally, Rosenstein said, told senators that he would not have signed the renewal of the FISA warrant for Carter Page had he been aware of exculpatory information withheld from the FISA court. In other words, information and data that would have went in Carter Page's favor, that would have exonerated him, was left out. The FBI lied to the FISA court, but Rod Rosenstein did not know that, and he would not have signed the paper. Now, whether all that's true or he's just kind of covering his backside, I don't know. But
well, you know, Ray, I got to say this. Now, Ray, neither you nor I are attorneys, so some of this is above our pay grade. But I got to say, as I'm listening to Steve recount some of what Rod Rosenstein has been saying as he's testifying before the Senate, the Senate Judiciary Committee. It reminds me of the show Hogan's Heroes. You remember Sergeant Schultz?
Sure.
I know nothing. This is what it sounds like he's saying to everything, every one of the controversial actions of the Department of Justice under President Obama, and into the Trump administration. Rod Rosenstein's going, I didn't know about that. And now that all the evidence has come forward and we are seeing the truth of what transpired, he's now saying, well, if I did know, of course, I wouldn't have done it the way it played out.
What was his position in the FBI at that time?
I think he was deputy director of the FBI.
Okay. Then my question is, how in the world, again, we're not on the inside of this, but how in the world are you a deputy director of the FBI, your leader, one of the most powerful positions you could be in? How is it possible that he didn't know this? He didn't know this. He didn't know this. Are we to suppose there was a conspiracy to keep him from knowing it? Is this classic bureaucratic foul up where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing? How do we explain that?
If I had to guess, let's assume that he's telling the truth, just for the sake of this argument, that he didn't know that stuff. That, to me, kind of speaks of the clandestine nature of the investigation, that they knew that it wasn't something that they were supposed to be doing. They knew it was illegitimate. Therefore, they're keeping their brass out of the loop, the people that are behind it, the Strzoks and Pages and those kind of people are behind this. And because if it's a straight-up real investigation, you're right, Ray, Rod Rosenstein would have known about it.
Well, now, he was U.S. Deputy Attorney General for 2 years from in 2017-2019. So, listen, I'm not trying to excuse anybody. I tend to think Rod Rosenstein was kind of a snake. Again, I want to be careful here. I don't want to be unfair. I don't want to slander the man. I tend to doubt that a person in his position would know nothing. These were incredibly political actions that were being taken.
Is it possible, Ed, that a man in his position could, I'm just thinking out loud here, I don't want to get in the business of making accusations, but is it possible a man in that kind of position could decide to know nothing?
I don't think so. And here's why. If you're asking someone who is a deputy attorney general if he knows about a particular case in Oakland, California, I can say, okay, maybe he didn't know that because you got U.S. attorneys all over the place. They're handling things. The U.S. deputy attorney general may not know what's going on in a lot of those localities. But when you talk about something this politically explosive, dealing with the elected president of the United States, when you're dealing with people in the position of Michael Flynn, I don't believe it. I'm just saying I don't believe it for a second that he didn't know, because that is the one thing somebody in his position is going to know about, something dealing with the president of the United States and the people surrounding him. I don't believe it for a second. I'm not coming right out and calling him a liar, because there may be a 5% chance that he didn't know. But
let me then play the devil's advocate. Is it a possibility, as Steve is suggesting, that the fix was in on the other side, that people conspired to make sure he didn't know that?
Well, that's why I say 5%. Maybe that's true. But if that is true, you have got to be so incompetent, so incredibly incompetent, that you can be played for a sucker on something so big. I guess that's
what it doesn't look good either way.
It doesn't look good either way. That's my two cents as an outside observer. Never having worked in Washington, maybe Ray, to your point, maybe it is so murky in that swamp that it is possible to hide those kind of things from the U.S. Deputy Attorney General. Maybe, but I'm not buying it. So, especially, as he's being questioned here, and saying, oh, man, no, if I'd only known, boy, then I would have done the right thing.
He didn't put it in a memo to himself, but he might as well have.
Right.
right.
All right. So that's Rod Rosenstein. My apologies to all the Rosensteins from Maryland, I think is where he's from, if I have got it right. But I'm not buying it. That's all I can say.
All right.
What else we got?
A lot of people have been noting how quickly these protests and riots went from being about George Floyd. To something else entirely.
Yeah, Abe was talking about that in the last segment.
I know. And Laura Logan, who's a journalist who's now, I believe she's on Fox Nation, the subscription service there, was talking about this, about bricks being placed strategically around cities.
On pallets,
about the tactics that are being used being the same everywhere, in every city, doesn't matter. This is what they do. I want you to hear a little bit of what she had to say, and then I want to follow it up with a little talk here. Cut 10.
They intercept police communications. They monitor police traffic. They use secure communications. They know where the police are going to go, and they know how to stop law enforcement responding to these incidents. And all of that is about escalation. That's about provoking a reaction. The police are talking about stashes of incendiary devices and stolen vehicles. And I mean, literally the streets filled with cars pouring in from out of town. And what's interesting, Laura, is it's all consistent. They're always dressed the same. They use the same tactics. They happen to be on every single street in every single city in the United States right now, where there are fires raging and protests. And no, not protests, riots, right? And they're using the same messaging everywhere. That kind of consistency speaks to real organization, real infrastructure, training, funding, financing.
Yeah, something's behind this. I came across a piece. It's actually four consecutive day editorials, I guess, by a gentleman named George Rassley. He is at the conservative HQ website, Richard Viguerie's conservative HQ.
Yeah.
He's on number three. The fourth one's going to come out tomorrow, but the first three, well, they're all titled "It's Not a Protest, It's Not a Riot, It's a Revolution." Mm. And he goes into detail about the organization, the financing, and the funding, and the goals of what's going on, of the people behind these riots. And it is very intentional, according to George Rassley.
You know, Ray, we're going to talk about this a little bit more here. So, folks, stay tuned. We're going to kind of dig down a little bit, drill down, whatever metaphor you want to use. Ray, I'm going to say something here that I don't think this is controversial for our listeners, but I think that the United States, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, I think most of the elites in this country, most of the brain trust, whatever you want to call them, believed that Marxism was dead. For all intents and purposes, Marxism was dead. We were just going to have to shovel some dirt on the coffin. It might exist in a few backwater places like Cuba. You know, obviously it still existed in the People's Republic of China. But for all intents and purposes, the big driver behind the communist push worldwide, the Soviet Union, was kaput. And I think it's becoming increasingly clear that Marxism and communism, socialism, is not done. It is the secularist's religion, because if you're a secularist, you believe in evolution, you are a materialist, you have to come up with materialistic explanations for human problems and materialistic solutions. I believe some of these groups that we're talking about, that Richard Viguerie's website is posting, by the way, that's well-known individual, Richard Viguerie, how you pronounce it, right?
Yeah.
I believe Marxists are alive and well, and I believe Marxist ideology is going to once again have to be recognized, just like radical Islam, as an existential threat to the existence of the West and therefore the United States.
Look, the Marxists are doing better today than any day since the fall of the Soviet Union. Your little historical thing there is exactly right. That for many years after the collapse of communism, after the end of the Soviet Union, We thought, well, North Korea, okay. We thought Cuba, okay. China, obviously, a big issue. But we didn't. We thought it wasn't spreading. But clearly, it has simply, it went underground. It never left the universities.
Right.
It never left the left-wing think tanks. It never left that. And it has, and now think of this, we're 30 years past, we're almost 30 years past the fall of the Soviet Union. So there's been a whole generation of young people who have no memory
right.
of the Soviet Union. It's Stalin and those Khrushchev and Brezhnev, I mean, all those are just names to them in some historical textbook. So they don't see the dangers of a Marxist takeover the way some of us do who've lived long enough to remember that. So yeah, I think the Marxists are alive and well. And probably more optimistic today about their chances than any time in 30 years.
Yeah. So a little bit of what George Rasley, and I got to put the S before the L. In my mind, it's backwards. But what he is saying is that groups like Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street, and Antifa banded together right after the election in 2016. The election kind of surprised them. It shocked them. And this is what he writes. These organizations and collectives morphed into a broader coalition organized as the resistance that has as its goal making America ungovernable in the Trump era. Anarchy, chaos, ungovernable. Right. They're the same kind of people who would send out protesters to Republican town hall meetings to disrupt them and try to make them not happen. They are the reason that Democrats, this is again reading from this post, advancing the goal of making America ungovernable is why House Democrat majorities under Speaker Pelosi has done nothing but engage in attack after attack on Donald Trump without producing an alternative agenda. They want to paralyze Congress. Hmm. And I know, Ed, you came across this. This is a list of 10 points of action from a group called Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, and it's kind of tied in here too. These are shocking.
Yeah, and this, and I got this from Laura Logan's
right.
Talk. We just had played a clip of what she was describing here. This is the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement. Now, here are their 10 points of action, and these are shocking for those who think that we will always have a reasonable political discussion to determine the direction of change in America. That's not what these people are about. So number one, liberation will be won by any means necessary. Number two, we will destroy the state, police, military, corporations, and all those who run the American plantation. Okay? We've seen the war on police yeah. over the last several years. Number three, we will live with dignity in a world without prisons. Number four, systems of punishment will be abolished. There will be no law to enforce, no money to protect. Number five, revolutionary justice will be determined by those who are oppressed. I mean, we see that kind of thing right. taught mm-hmm. on college campuses from coast to coast. Number six, there will be no government. No person or group will have power over another. If you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you. Number seven, communities will make decisions about how they live and will make sure that everyone has what they need to live a dignified life. Number eight, land is not property. It is alive, communal, and must be protected. Number nine, alongside international comrades, we will destroy all borders for the free movement of people everywhere. And number 10, militant networks will defend our revolutionary communities. Liberation begins where America dies. All right, folks, you think it can't happen here? Stay asleep. You'll see.
One of the other things that George Rasley is making a connection with is between this movement and the Palestinian struggle, the Palestinian Liberation Organization and Hamas, the terrorist group there. There's a gentleman named William Jacobson who had wrote a book called Legal Insurrection, and he's linking Black Lives Matter and Hamas, Palestinian front groups, which is why Black Lives Matter are there, which is why they're here. It's all part of a larger effort, particularly on U.S. campuses, to use intersectional theory to tie domestic race issues into Palestinian complaints about Israel, among other things. I came across a video of last night of protesters in front of the White House in Washington, D.C., chanting religious Shiite Muslim praise songs to Iran's supreme leader.
Where was this?
Right at the White House, right in front of the White House by that gate.
Yeah.
They're having a Muslim service right there. It's all tied together, and the goal is the destruction of society as we know it.
Well, it's that's the radical revolutionary Marxist revolutionary dream, is to bring everything down, and then you rise up with your battalions of previously trained people. And why do you think that this revolutionary abolitionist movement is saying we will destroy the state, police, military corporations, all those who run the American plantation? Do people really think no one's going to be in charge after that? No, these radicals will be in charge.
Yeah.
So they're calling for no police and no prisons, right, and no government.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is part of the delusion that eventually infects communist countries to the point where they collapse.
Right.
Venezuela. Okay.
Right.
So this is completely detached from reality as Christians understand it when you talk about human nature. This is not tied to anything remotely resembling the way people act.
So in theory, communism, I can see where it would be appealing. If, you know, everybody is kind of owns everything and we all help each other out. But the problem is that we are sinful people. And the sin nature will always seek its own. It will always lie, cheat, steal, kill. And that's what you have with a godless society, which is what they want. Not only do they want no government, no prisons, no money, they want no God.
Right. And that's ultimately what this is about, is a war on God. God is the one who established government. You just read Romans 13. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into preach mode here. And let me just tell our Facebook followers that this 10-point plan of action from the revolutionary abolitionist movement, that is now posted on our Today's Issues Facebook page. So that
does not mean we endorse them.
No. Oh yeah. Oh my goodness.
Right.
Yeah. No. Ray, you know, it's. I always want to be careful when I start reading about this. And Steve, you sent me these links to these stories, which I just kind of only had time to just briefly look over. There's always a part of my brain, Ray, that always says, this is kind of conspiracy land, and this could never happen in America. But I would say Christians should at least know what people are thinking and doing. Whether or not it ultimately succeeds is irrelevant. We should be aware of what people who hate God and who hate government and those kinds of things, what they're up to. Would you agree or disagree?
Number one, the Bible talks about the men of Issachar who understood the times and knew what the people of God should do. You can't know what the people of God should do until you understand the times in which we are living. And these are strange times. And you know what, Ed? I would be inclined to doubt the reality of that 10-point document, except I read social media every day.
Yes.
And there are people on my social media feed saying exactly those things. So yes, we need to be informed, people.
To encourage you, though, let me give you Isaiah chapter 8, verse 12. The Lord says, do not call conspiracy everything this people calls a conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear and do not dread it. The Lord Almighty is the one you are to regard as holy. He is the one you are to fear. He is the one you are to dread. That's Isaiah chapter 8, verses 12 through 14. All right, folks, we're out of time. More great stuff tomorrow, we hope. More great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. Lord willing, we'll see you tomorrow.